Good evening and welcome to another edition of Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. Thank you so much for tuning in at 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio. Or if you're streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, welcome to you as well. Tonight we were going to talk about a special event that was going to happen on September 15th at Memorial Opera House. It was a fundraising concert for Aaron's Farm Animal Sanctuary done by Rockin' Horse and Chick Norris, two great bands out of Chicago. But due to scheduling issues, that concert will be postponed until sometime into the early part of 2019. So instead, we'll be focusing on Aaron's Farm itself and all the good work that Aaron is doing at the farm. Erin Yans is my guest, and she'll be joining us momentarily. Good evening and welcome to another edition of Midwest Beat. I'm your host, Tom Lounges. Thank you so much for tuning in at 89.1 FM Lakeshore Public Radio. Or if you're streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, welcome to you as well. Tonight we were going to talk about a special event that was going to happen on September 15th at Memorial Opera House. It was a fundraising concert for Aaron's Farm Animal Sanctuary done by Rockin' Horse and Chick Norris, two great bands out of Chicago. But due to scheduling issues, that concert will be postponed until sometime into the early part of 2019. So instead, we'll be focusing on Aaron's Farm itself and all the good work that Aaron is doing at the farm. Erin Yans is my guest, and she'll be joining us momentarily. So stay with us. We'll talk to Aaron, and we'll get Glenn Reyna, who is a founding member and the leader of Rockin' Horse. He's the guy that put the whole charity event together that will again be postponed until early 2019. Information on the rescheduling of that date will be posted on aaronsfarm.net, as well as the Facebook pages of Tom Lounges, yours truly, the bands Rockin' Horse and Chick Norris. So we'll make sure you know about the rescheduled date, but don't go anywhere now, because after your headlines, you're going to get to meet this incredible woman and hear about the wonderful work she does at Aaron's Farm Animal Sanctuary. Aaron joins us after this. Let's see, we heard cows, there's that rooster, we heard cows, we heard roosters, we heard goats and or sheep, I wasn't quite sure in there, dogs barking, all kinds of critters, and that might be what it sounds like if you pay a visit to Aaron's Farm, which is an animal sanctuary right here in Hobart, Indiana, not too long here, a couple years, about a year.
Well, going on 2 years, yeah.
Erin is here herself. Erin Yans is our guest tonight, and we were going to be doing a big concert. You may have seen the posters around. You've probably heard us talk about it here on the air and also on some of my other projects for September 15th, just about 2 weeks away. And due to scheduling issues, we are going to have to move that show and reschedule it at the Memorial Opera House, the historic Memorial Opera House, celebrating its 125th year this year in Valparaiso. Rockin' Horse and Chick Norris, the two bands that were part of this event, so we'll be back on the rescheduled date. We may even add a few more things now that we got a little more time to play with it. So please make note that the September 15th show that we originally scheduled for Memorial Opera House to help Aaron's Farm out has been, temporarily canceled. We'll be rescheduling it for the first part of 2019. Watch my social pages, watch Aaron's Farm pages, watch Rockin' Horses pages. Just be very alert because you're going to hear a lot more about this event and a lot more about this this wonderful farm. Aaron, let's talk first of all, what got you into animal rescue, animal welfare, animal care? I know a lot of people in the animal rescue world, whether it's cats, dogs, horses, you know, sheep, whatever, baby seals, which there was just a big tragic hunt up in the Antarctic just this past week or so. What is it that triggered that empathy, that love, that cracked your heart?
Well, I think, you know, growing up in Chicago, I was like a city kid. I always felt like I was born in the wrong place. I was drawn to the country and drawn to animals, and I always wanted to be there. And throughout my, you know, life, sought out careers that would give me exposure to animals and the lifestyle like that that I loved. But I just was an animal lover since I was a kid. And as time went on and I, you know, built a career at, you know, I started at a pet store that went to a zoo, to a farm, to, you know, different places like that, I started to see a repeat of something that really broke my heart. I would see animals, you know, not treated the way that I would want them to be treated, or, you know, animals abandoned by people that said they were, you know, in this rent-a-pet society, take care of it, and then 2 weeks later they lose interest and throw it away. I just, you know, it really broke my heart, and I realized, like, you know, somebody has to do something about this. Like, we have to educate these kids. We have to start with these kids and teach them that, you know, we need to be responsible. We need to have empathy for animals, and that's kind of just where we started. And I was a vet nurse for many years, and so I'd pull up at work, and there'd be an animal with a broken leg, like a lizard or something that you know, it left in a box, and I would of course take it home and nurse it back to health.
Right.
You know, my aunts are all teachers, so they would say, "Hey, you know, bring it to this classroom and tell our kids about it, because, you know, a couple of them in the city, and the kids maybe hadn't had exposure to lizards and snakes and things." So I would go and bring these animals for free. I did this many years, and it was so amazing to see these kids light up. I think at the beginning of this little program I would do with two or three animals, you know, at the beginning the kids would be screaming and knocking chairs over because they'd never seen a big giant iguana
or
something.
It's an iguana. It'll eat me.
Yeah, they'd only see it in the movies or something. But by the end of the program, like, you know, 45 minutes later, the kids are like, "Oh, can I have another turn? Can I hold it again? Can I, you know?" And so, to see this transformation over and over again, I was like, you know, like, we need more of this. Like, we need people to be exposed and to see, because, you know, they're growing up removed from nature in the city. And, you know,
and sadly, it's becoming more and more the case.
Yeah.
It seems like we're taking all the land away.
Yeah.
What breaks my heart is seeing all the roadkill.
Oh, gosh.
We are encroaching on their land, the coyotes and the possums and the raccoons and all the other little guys.
Yeah.
They have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
And sadly, we just assume it's okay because nothing stands in the way of progress.
Yeah.
But
I think, but even kids today, you know, even if they're not in the city, they're still getting more removed from nature because these iPads are taking over and they're, you know, iPhones, and, you know, they're just in the phone all day long where they need to just put the phone down and come out and be in nature. And so I saw a real need for that and started doing these educational programs. And the programs we called Nature's Creatures, and I would, you know, just do it for free year after year. And after a couple of years, they started giving me a little bit of cash for coming out, and other teachers had heard about it, and it kind of spread like wildfire. And then fast forward to, you know, years later, I make it a business. And, you know, and then all the profits that I had made, I used to rescue more animals and to pay for their food and to pay for their veterinary care and stuff. So I was a vet nurse for 20 years. So I did a lot of treatments at home or could save money that way. But, you know, it just... You know, there's just like an endless need of animals at home. I always have a wait list. So,
it seems like no matter how many you rescue, there's five more to replace that animal.
Oh, I know.
You know, it's almost disheartening. I know, working with the Humane Society, and we're on a small scale compared to horses and cows and critters like that. Ours get adopted. You kind of keep them.
Yeah.
I mean, and what do you do when you get, you've got llamas and goats and pigs and, I mean, a lot of things that people don't normally say, well, yeah, we're going to give it a happy home.
Yeah. So we, at our farm, you know, what this Nature's Creatures program kind of over many years, mm-hmm. you know, kind of grew, and I used that money to create this Aaron's Farm, which is a sanctuary now for animals, and we're now newly nonprofit because we've just moved to the state from Illinois. So we're only nonprofit about a year or so, but we've been rescuing for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And we've been active in the schools and visiting hundreds of kids and thousands of, you know, hundreds of schools, thousands of kids every year educating. But we're new to this community. And what we're, you know, what I'm trying, you know, I'm not doing the dogs and cats that you,
right.
I'm taking other things.
You're filling the void that there's a lot of dog and cat shelters.
Yeah,
there
exactly.
are not a lot. There's some horse sanctuaries, other things too, mm-hmm. but not so much in this area.
Yeah.
You are filling a deep void that we have out here.
Yeah. And what we have horses that we are rescue in neglect cases. We have horses that we pull from slaughter. We have factory farmed animals. We have unwanted pets, you know. All sorts of things. You can come to our farm and see a giant tortoise, you know, mm-hmm. 10-foot snake,
a
llama,
horse. There's a picture of that on our flyer here.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff. But, you know, they're all the same to me. There's mm-hmm. one that's not, one's not more important than the other. They all needed a home, and they have something to teach us.
How do they come to you?
So, all different. You know, there's people that call me constantly. I probably have, you know, 20 pigs, populated pigs on a wait list right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of it, yeah, people usually are reaching out to me. I don't have to call looking for anything. They find me. I don't have to go looking for anything. But they find their way to us, and we help what we can. And but we're trying to grow because there is such a need. It is never ending, and you have to kind of take what you can and stay afloat and go from there.
When did the first farm start?
So I started.
You've been doing this for 20 some years, as you said. But when did this escalate to this situation?
Yeah, so I was for 10 years in the city of Chicago in an apartment, mm-hmm. you know, taking in parrots or lizards and things like that. And then
your neighbors must have loved you.
Oh, they did. Oh, yeah, they did. So then about 10 years ago, I started renting a farm in Illinois just to try it out because I knew that's what I wanted to do. But I, you know, grew up in the city and I didn't know mm-hmm. if I could handle being away from city tributes. And so. But the second I got out there, I was like, no, this is absolutely what I'm doing. And then I didn't own that property. I rented it. And so recently we purchased the property in Hobart, and I sold my house in Chicago, mm-hmm. and we moved here.
What's interesting, and I'm sure you know the history of the grounds you're on, it was a slaughterhouse.
Yeah, it's very ironic.
Talk about irony. It was a meat processing slaughterhouse, and you have turned it into an animal sanctuary.
Yeah.
There's got to be some kind of incredible karma
with what
you've done.
But the change of energy there, just, mm-hmm. you know, it's just a happy place now. It was not a happy place for many animals for a long time. But, and this is just the beginning. We have so many amazing plans for this place. We really hope to turn it into like a destination for Hobart. We hope to get the community involved and with classes and tours and all these things that we did at the other farm in Illinois, but we plan to do here. We just have some, you know, fixing up to do with this property.
Right.
It was a fixer.
Now, how big is it?
It's 33 acres.
Okay.
So about 13 of those acres are currently designated wildlife, and I'd like to keep it like that as long as possible. And then we grow our own hay, so that's kind of a great way to, like, help offset some of the food costs of the big horses and cows and things that we take. And then the rest is just where the animals are at pastures and in their pasture.
Now, how many animals came with you from Illinois, and how many have you accumulated or acquired since you've been here?
It's easy to accumulate when you have more space. So, I'll just say what we currently have, about 13 equines, which is like donkeys and ponies and horses, mm-hmm. All were in need of home. There's 4 cows and, in all different cases too. We have one of our cows is a cancer survivor. That's a fun story. And then we have, you know, 10 sheep, 10 goats, mm-hmm. a whole bunch of chickens and ducks, a couple llamas and stuff like that. And then there's a couple parrots and tortoises and maras. And so there's a lot of stuff. We got a lot of creatures.
Speaking of donkeys, I'll tell you one thing is my friend Glenn from Rockin' Horse.
Yes.
When he came to your farm, I didn't think we were going to get him off the farm.
He loved the donkeys.
He has a thing for donkeys. Yeah. In fact, is Glenn on the phone?
I think when he came, he's like, where are the donkeys?
Glenn, are you
take
there?
To the donkeys.
Do I have to answer that? Really?
You do have to answer that. You
my
tell me what your
fetish.
Donkey fetish is all about.
Well, that's strange you should mention that, because I'm a firm believer that there's got to be some sort of genetic memory in people, I think.
So you think you were a donkey in the past?
Well, I have the strange bloodline. I am right down the middle. I'm half German and half Mexican.
Okay.
And I didn't know my father's family very well, but there's just things that resonate in my blood. And one of those is donkeys. And I just, ever since I was a little kid, when I saw a donkey, I wanted so bad to pet them and to know them. And I was a city kid, you know, like mm-hmm. Aaron's. That's really all I grew up knowing. So I didn't get to see animals much live, except for Brookfield Zoo or somewhere like that, where you know, they're sort right. of on commercial display. So when right. I get to interact with them on the kind of level that you do at Aaron's farm, it was just wonderful. I mean, I just spent, you know, probably an hour with her little donkeys, Latte and Cocoa. They're so cute. And I don't know. It's just something was buzzing in my genetic makeup with that. So
you know, maybe they can come and visit and graze in your yard.
And well, I'll tell you what. If she ever has an adoption program, you know, where you get to sign up to help support the animals, I think they'd be first on my list.
All well, right. Glenn, I have some exciting news for you, though. I don't know if you I told you this when you were there, but because the donkeys are Coco and Latte, and Coco is going to have a baby.
Yeah, she's preggers. I know
yeah.
that.
Wow.
Okay, yeah.
So you'll have three soon.
Yeah, we'll have to figure out a name, though. Maybe Glenn can name it. We'll name it.
There you go, Glenn.
Baby Chai, or Baby Mocha.
You can adopt the donkey.
Wow. Now, will they just stay right there with their parents? Or what? Or well, I guess the donkey only has one.
Hopefully.
Baby, right?
Yeah, I think they can have twins, but it's not very common. But yeah,
really?
Wow. Yeah, they'll probably stick around. Donkeys are actually like the guard animals at the farm. People don't realize that they look like cute little docile mm-hmm. ponies. But like if a coyote or something came, that would hurt the other animals. They chase them off. They'll attack them. So,
cool.
Yeah, so they're kind of dual purpose. They were rescues needing a home, but they're also predator guards. So they.
Wow. So you're saying that the baby donkey will just be... probably a dumb question, but that's just going to join the farm and grow up
gonna,
there.
He's just going to be there. I've heard that baby donkeys are the cutest thing on earth, so I can't wait. It's going to be exciting.
Wow.
So.
You can check in on Aaron's farm at aaronsfarm.net, and you can also find her on Facebook. Just go to Facebook, and it's Aaron's Farm.
Aaron's Farm 1.
Aaron's Farm 1. Wait, is there a 2 out there?
No, there was somebody else that had Aaron's Farm, like a Christmas tree farm or something.
Dear.
I know. But, you know, our website is actually... in the process of being like overhauled, so mm-hmm. Make sure you check back in like 2-3 weeks because it's
so temporarily down right now.
No, it's up. It's just going to be bigger and better,
bigger and better,
awesomer,
more donkey pictures.
Yeah, probably more donkey pictures. Exactly.
You know, all fun donkey talk aside, I'll tell you. Well, my wife Lori and I, Lori's always been a big animal lover, and of course that means a lot more than just fuzzy bunnies and things. I mean, our heart really breaks when we see the way some animals are abandoned and treated.
Mm-hmm.
So we heard about Aaron's farm actually through your wife, Tom Ellis.
Right.
We got out there.
That's
and
who told me about it.
It's a wonderful thing to see. I mean, the you know, petting a donkey for a little while is one thing, but taking care of them day in, day out, mm-hmm. their health needs and just everything that it takes to support them, including shoveling poop
that's
every day.
We call that mucking the stalls.
It is just... That's it's amazing. I mean, Aaron's just a fantastic person. I can't imagine putting that kind of dedication into something. It's just incredible.
I think people think it's all like, you know, hugging the donkeys and stuff.
Right.
In real
right.
life,
no, it's,
real life, I just
farm life is tough. It is very tough.
It's tough.
I mean, just having dogs, they mm-hmm. get me up at the crack of dawn. You got to let them out.
Oh, yeah.
You got to feed them. You got to give them meds. I can't imagine having an entire farm of animals with so many different needs.
Yeah.
How much help do you have? What kind of staffing do you have? Do you take volunteers? How can people help you?
That's a great question because we are always looking for help. We have two like part-time helpers, Sarah and Emma, that can kind of help as I can afford, you know, mm-hmm. for them. Most of the stuff I do day to day out myself. We have a great team of volunteers that are very new that we've just gotten in the last, you know, 6 to 9 months from Hobart and Chicagoland areas that come out, which are great. And to volunteer, you can register with Sarah online. It's you just email aaronsfarm.volunteer@gmail.com to register, and you just fill out an application. Then you come for an orientation day, and then you can start working.
Is there an age limitation?
You know, I tried to have it mainly adults and stuff because there's a lot of bigger
right.
work. But there's a few younger kids that come with their parent that also volunteers. So if the parent's there, that's fine if they're a little bit younger. So
now, how did you choose Hobart of all places? I mean, there's a lot of rural areas, but Hobart, it would not have been my first choice, I mean, in thinking.
You know, I think being from Chicago and then renting a farm in, like, Will County, yeah, I was kind of looking in those areas for a long time just, you know, because I was more familiar with the state and mm-hmm. my family was in there around there. But I just wanted to be in proximity to Chicago because our bread and butter is still this Nature's Creatures program that, you know, we do at the schools that, you know, I go to hundreds of schools in Chicagoland area and around every year educating, and that's our primarily funding for the farm. But I, you know, after doing that for so many years, I was like, this is great. I'm doing what I love. I'm working with animals and I'm educating kids, and I can see every day that we're making a difference, and this is great. And I feel like happy about my place in the world. But I was like, you know, but I don't want to be in the car all day
right.
with animals. I don't want my animals in crates all day. This is not
right.
what I envisioned.
It's like show and tell.
Yeah. So like, I'm like, we need a location where they can field trip to us, you know, come to us. The animals can stay where they're happy and comfortable. And then we can still have this impact that, you know, I think is desperately needed. And so, yeah, we after a while, I just started looking outside of Illinois. And, you know, one of my good friends from high school is in St. John. And she's like, she's a realtor. She's like, Aaron, come on. I got some, you know.
You got the place.
She used to bring her kids to the other farms. And she's like, I got some places for you. Whenever you're ready to check out Indiana, I got some great places. And, you know, she gave me a list. And this one probably was there for a while because it was a slaughterhouse. Like, who mm-hmm. wants to go buy and live right. in an old slaughterhouse? But I didn't care. You know, I just saw the land and I was like, this would be amazing for our animals. There's a huge duck pond and, you know, they would be so happy here. You know, I don't care what my house looks like, you know.
Right.
But, so
we're talking about educating kids. And Glenn, you referenced zoos being a city kid. Yeah. And Aaron, you did as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of pro-animal people are anti-zoo. Mm-hmm. But there are some good people at the zoos.
Yeah.
And in the city, you can't have a farm in the middle of the loop or somewhere. It is a place that serves to educate kids. So what are your thoughts, Aaron, first of all, on zoos?
You know, I think every case is an individual case. I think there's some okay. amazing zoos out there, and I think there's some not so hot ones out there. But, you know, I think when it comes to people that think we need to close everything down, I think what those people forget is where do these animals go?
Exactly.
You know,
you can't release them back into the wild because there is no wild and they couldn't survive.
Exactly. So, so it's, you know, that's one of the things we talk about in our programs when I bring this big giant snake out. And, you know, there's people that hate snakes and are mm-hmm. paranoid of snakes. But I say,
I'm not real warm and fuzzy with snakes. I like a lot of, I don't dislike snakes. I'm just not one to like cuddle it.
Yeah. So,
Jose, you might want to cuddle a snake.
Note to self, if you ask me back, I'll bring a giant snake. No, but I think, you know, people don't realize, they always say, oh, take that big snake back to the jungle where he belongs. I'm like, well, we can't really do that because they're disappearing in their native habitat.
Right.
And we need to learn about them. And because if we don't care about them, we're not caring about their habitat. And their habitat is rainforest, which is extremely important. You know, so yeah, there's...
Glenn, what's your take on zoos? I mean, having been a city kid growing up, and your only exposure, as you mentioned, was really, other than cats and dogs and squirrels and pigeons, was the zoo.
You know, that's really kind of a difficult issue to kind of think through because, first of all, you have to get really educated on it, and mm-hmm. I've done some reading on it, and the more you'll learn, the more you realize you don't know. In terms of how the animals are treated and the funding for it and the heart of the people that are in charge of those zoos. I mean, they really are wonderful people. And like Aaron said, you know, the one is not the same as the other.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ones that I grew up, like Lincoln Park or Brookfield, it's obvious. Their curators obviously really care about their animals. Mm-hmm. But, you know, sometimes you get the feeling that they are animals that are caged that you wish they weren't caged. But then on the other hand, kids like me, that's the only interface we ever had with quote-unquote wild animals. And the only way, the only chance I had to get a heart for them and a sense for that they're real beings, not just pictures in a book. So I think they serve their purpose. It's kind of, I don't know. I'd be better if...
Yeah.
We didn't have to have zoos, but I think mm-hmm. they definitely serve their purpose.
The open cage concept that came about 25 years ago or so, where they weren't in bars, I think that was a big step forward, mm-hmm. personally. And again, I'm not endorsing or encouraging zoos,
right.
but I just think that, like you both said, there is no other place for some of these animals to go. And if you just joined us, you're listening to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, or streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. And we thank you for being with us today. And not so much a music show, but a show that is very important to me as a radio host and as a human being. and that is Animal Sanctuary Care, Animal Rescue. Our guest is Aaron Yans. She is with Aaron's Farm. Glenn Reyna is on the phone. He's a member of Rockin' Horse. Should be called Rockin' Donkey. But again, the concert that we were planning with Rockin' Horse and Chick Norris, I just realized we had a horse and a chick in there. I just noticed that. I mean, shame on me. But this show has been postponed until sometime in early 2019 due to scheduling issues. So thank you for being here and listening to this and being part of this. Aaron's Farm is located in Hobart, Indiana at 5200 South Liverpool Road. It's how many acres?
33.
And people can come to this. Now, that you do set appointments, is that correct? You can't just drop in because you are a working farm.
Yeah,
because
we're still under construction, right, renovating, since we're still fairly new. So, but I know people want to see it, and mm-hmm. I know people want to come, so absolutely, people can send me a text or, you know, an email, and we can set up a time. But right now, it's just by appointment.
That brings me to the fact that we want people to come and see the animals and learn about them. And I'm going to be the devil's advocate here. What is the difference to the common person on the street between what you're offering for people to come and visit and a petting zoo? And I know petting zoos, they bother me, and I'll share that later, but what's the difference? Why is this not a petting zoo situation?
Okay, so what I think people experience, and I've kind of heard people say this, is when you come into our farm, it's not like there's a goat behind a pen and you just pet them over there. Like, you come in and you're coming into their habitat, and mm-hmm. there's different animals interacting, and there's goats and pigs and all these other animals in there. And it's not like you're coming, like, it's not designed to be comfortable for people. It's designed to be comfortable for the animals, because mm-hmm. that's the main part. And people that come, they sit back and they sit down among these animals and they see all these different species, like, getting along and interacting and engaging in each other. And they're like, man, like, this is how the world should be. Like, all these different people just getting along. Like, this is, it brings so much people so much joy, because I've heard them say this, that just seeing all these animals get along. And so it's, yeah, I mean, people can bring treats. I do allow that, you know, for the animals. And I don't think that makes me a petting zoo.
Right.
Animals enjoy it. It's enrichment for them and they love it. So why would I deprive them of that, you know? But,
Well, the petting zoo thing that bothers me is they are in small confined areas mm-hmm. and they are constantly force fed corn and things
that.
And you see the swollen bellies on some of these animals. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I'm thinking, what is wrong with this picture? A petting zoo could serve a good purpose, but at the same time, it's in its own way animal abuse.
Yeah, I think the difference is in those scenarios, like, the animals looked at as a commodity mm-hmm. versus, you know, ours is not like that at all. It's like a sanctuary and it's education based. And, you know, it's not just, oh, that's a goat. How much money can we make feeding them corn? You know,
right.
It's, you know.
Put another quarter in.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Well, if I may be so bold.
You may.
To turn a phrase, I would say the biggest difference is a lot of the petting zoos I've seen are profit centers. Mm-hmm. And Aaron's wonderful farm is very obviously a not profit center. It's all about the animals in their, as she said, in their sort of natural habitat. You're going into their house, and they look happy. They look,
healthy,
relaxed. And it's just, wow, that's a whole different ballgame.
I like the picture we used on the, I think you took it, Glenn, the picture, or maybe I got it from the website, of the deer with the rooster. Where they're, like, looking at each other, kind of they're having a conversation. Yeah. It's like...
Yeah. Well, that's actually a mara. Everyone that comes to the farm says, what is that little thing? It's a little deer.
Yeah,
it's
cool.
It's actually called Patagonian mara.
Okay.
It's a little
is
rodent.
It a deer family member?
No.
No?
Okay. It's actually a rodent. It's in the cavy family.
It's a rodent?
It's
a big rodent.
It's like the cutest rodent on earth. it's in the cavy family. It's so related to guinea pigs.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Now, you rescue animals that are injured.
Yes.
What is... So, what is one of the more horrific stories that turned out to be happy?
A lot of these stories are not happy endings. And people don't realize the emotional side of running a sanctuary mm-hmm. because it is very emotionally draining. Like, for example, Ivy, one of our pot-bellied pigs that somebody had called, and I get calls on pigs like this all the time, and we went out to get her after, weeks of trying to set this up, and she had been abandoned in an apartment building.
Wow.
And she had been living in this apartment building basement for up to 5 years, they said. And I just thought it was somebody's pet. You know, when they send me pictures, it's somebody cuddling on the bed with their pot-bellied pig that they love so much. But when you arrive and you see that this pig is locked in a basement room with no window and no lights and covered in feces and garbage, you know, I opened the door. I was like, wait, there's an animal in here? It was just like piles of garbage. And they're like, oh, yeah. And I called, and all of a sudden from out from this mattress, you know, from underneath this mattress comes this pig screaming towards my flashlight. And, you know, part of rescue is having to, like, save face and keep it together.
Right.
Because you got to get that animal out of there.
Right.
So there's, like, that. But then there's the other side of that people don't realize when you get home. Like, you know, people look at pigs or other animals as just, you know, food animals, like just nothing much but a commodity right. for us. But, you know, a pig has the intelligence of a three-year-old human. And I've got my daughter's going to be three in December. And so that hits home because she's got a language. She can solve problems. Like, you know, she's a thinking being. And so mm-hmm. is this other animal. And so people don't realize, like, a lot of these traumatic cases, it takes months for them to recover, like, emotionally, and because people just don't think that these animals have emotions,
right?
And so, and that's, you know, that's how we've justified eating them or treating them the way that we have. But when you realize that they do, you know, the whole world changes because you see that this animal is an emotional being. It took this animal 6 months to not scream anytime somebody was within 10 feet of them, you know. And we see that a lot with the horses that we pull from slaughter. You know, people don't all the time say, you know, I didn't even know slaughter happened in this country. And, you know, years ago, I was, you know, one of these keyboard warriors when I was a kid, you know, mm-hmm. trying to end the slaughter. What I didn't realize, it made it worse because now they ship them to Canada and Mexico. And there's right. 30,000 to 100,000 horses that are sent to slaughter every year. And, you know, 70% of those are, you know, backyard breeders like show horses and stuff. Right. And 30% is maybe race
when
horses.
When they outlast yeah. or outlive their use, they're put in yeah. the kill pens.
Yeah, exactly. So they go to these auctions and, you know, there might be a few people that attend, but there might be 20 horses. So whatever's not picked up by those few families, you know, you'll have perfectly healthy animals. You'll have, you know, a horse can be 6 months old to be mm-hmm. slaughtered. So that's a baby, you know. So these animals end up there and, you know, and then these kill pens are they're all crammed in there. There's not enough food, and it's kind of a fight or die situation. So it's like survival of the fittest. And these, you know, older animals get injured or die. You know, it's a very emotionally draining experience for these animals. So when you pull them from slaughter and you get them back, like one of the most amazing things that I've experienced from pulling horses is that you see this transformation take place. And it might take six, nine, or 12 months, but it takes, like, one of our horses, Tucker, came and he would rear and bite and kick, you know. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? Like, you know, I'm gonna get killed. But now this animal is, you know, a year and a half later from being pulled from slaughter, he's, you know, he was skin and bones when he came and was, you know, just vicious because he had this fight or die attitude from being in his kill pen for weeks. Mm-hmm. And once he, over many months of realizing, okay, I have enough food, I have shelter. If I injure myself, they're going to take care of me. They love me. They come brush me. They touch me in gentle ways. Like, you see his personality start to emerge. And this animal is a beautiful animal. He's got these big, bright eyes. He's so intelligent, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, it gives me chills talking about him. And now my two and a half year old daughter can walk him on a lead rope, and he's, like, perfectly fine, and he's super safe. So that's, you know... You know, a lot of these cases are coming from bad places, mm-hmm. and, you know...
Well, we see the same with dogs, too, a lot of the abuse cases, and even fight dogs. I mean, you can see the temperament change yeah. and the light come back
yeah.
in the eyes.
Mm-hmm. You know, Tom, I wish that Aaron would tell the story of Right on Point. Lori and I just went to an event at her farm. It was a birthday party for Elda the pig.
It was. Birthday party for Elda.
That was just amazing to see the personality of that pig. And then hearing the story of what it went through to get to that happy little birthday party is just incredible.
How long have you had her?
So Elda, well, she just had her first birthday. Oh, okay. So she turned one. So Elda is actually like a factory farm pig, and we do factory farm animals as well because they're no different than any other animals.
Mm-hmm.
They're thinking beings and that feel pain. And
how did you get her? Did she fall off a truck, literally?
She jumped off a slaughter truck onto the highway. So like, when pigs are like 3 to 4 weeks old, they're taken from their mom to be sent to fattening farms. In nature, she would nurse them until they're 6 or 8 weeks old. But in factory farms, they're pulled early because they want to get mom pregnant again. It's all about making money and food. And so the babies are sent to fattening farms. So that's where she was going. And so somehow she must have climbed on somebody's back and squiggled out of one of those holes and ended up on the highway. And a good Samaritan saw that and picked her up. And then the local vet took her and then she found her way to us, basically. So yeah, we were throwing a birthday. I mean, like all of our animals have birthdays at the farm, but we threw a birthday party for her because it was so special that, you know, she is one of like 100 million pigs that are processed in the United States every year that don't ever get to reach their first birthday.
Wow.
You know, so now she's, when she came to us, she was about 14 pounds. And she's about 700 pounds.
Wow.
So, you know, of course she was
keep
like
the birthday cake away from her.
She was lounging in the pond. You know, I didn't want to, you know, if she's 600-700 pounds and she's in the pond, like she's not getting out unless she wants to. So I had all the guests, we all came around the pond and we sit around her and we started singing happy birthday. And she at first was kind of like looking at us. And then as soon as they said, happy, you know, Elda came, like her name in the song, she like perked up, she sat up, she's like, oh, this is for me.
So she recognizes her name like a dog would.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. She's extremely intelligent. So, yeah, so she came out and had her carrot cake, low sugar. The cake was great because it was from Lulo's Vegan Eat and Treats, and that's in Crown Point. And she donated a bunch of cupcakes, and she made Elda's cake for us. So that was really great. So it's just great.
Yeah, she kind of made a pig out of herself.
Now, is that a typical type situation? Do you have a lot of events like that?
You know, that's more of like a fun kind of family event. We do a lot of learning events. Like at the farm, we do classes and camps. Now, we haven't done much this year because we've been renovating and we're hoping to bring all that back by next summer. But historically, we've done the animal programs in schools. We've also had field trip to our farm, which we hope to start again next year. We do classes. We do a class called All About Animals. It's where it's like every week it's, you know, maybe 10 kids in each class. And each week it's something new. One day we'll focus on chickens. One day we'll focus on lizards or, you know, or maybe one day we'll focus on, you know, herbivores versus carnivores and, you know, things like that. And then we do continuing education classes for teachers. Let's see, visits, camps. Camp was fun. We had where the kids come, there's 10 or 15 kids and they'd come for the day and they start, you know, they bring their own lunch and they come for the day and they learn. You know, they help feed breakfast. They help muck stalls. They get, and this is what kids need. These kids aren't talking about dropping the iPads and things like that. They need to put the phones down, put the video games down, and get outside and pick up a shovel and learn how our day's work.
My wife tried to get me to muck a stall once. It did not go well. We have a Clydesdale she had. Well, actually, it's staying at our friend's place now. I guess it's the friend's horse now. Yeah. But anyway, she visits all the time, and she's like, "Oh, there's nothing like mucking a stall in the morning." I'm like, "Oh, I'm glad you enjoy that."
No, she's right. I'm telling you because I always tell people, I'm like, mucking stalls is like therapy for me. It's like, it's not only it's a workout, so you're getting healthy,
right,
but it's also, I'm like, I'm thinking about everything going on in life and like what I need to think do that day. It's
I'm like watching where I'm stepping while I'm in there. That's all I'm doing.
You got to get the right boots. That doesn't matter.
Oh, man. So we've got about 15 minutes left. What have we not talked about that we need to let people know about Aaron's farm?
So I would love to talk about like some of our plans. So, because we've been focused kind of like laying low and focused on renovating and fixing the farm up so it's safe for visitors and safe for animals because we had to do a lot of repairs. It wasn't like a setup for a sanctuary and moved in. It was like a sheep farm that was really old and then it was a slaughterhouse. So,
now, before we get into the plans, when you're doing the renovating, do you get like local unions to help? I mean, do you get people that are craftsmen that will step up and say, "Hey, we love animals. How can we help?"
I have had some offers, but I would love that. That would be amazing. We need electrical. We need electrical work right now.
I know a lot of the unions. They have apprenticeships, and they get the young workers in, and they have to do projects to learn.
Yeah,
it might be something worth reaching out to.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the things that we started when we became a nonprofit is we started a Patreon account, and Patreon is a way where people can become like monthly donors, and that has helped us tremendously. That's actually like I feel like one of our most important ways of growing because, you know, people can sign up for $5 a month. That's like a cup of coffee a month.
Right. You know, now you sound like one of those late night commercials for the price of a cup of coffee. But that's true. I mean, or, you know, money you don't even think you have in your pocket.
What do you spend on Netflix every month? Like, you know, come on, you know, like but all those people accumulated adds up to a significant amount where we can actually do stuff. So I've been like chipping away, you know, I'm not at the point where I'm all my costs are covered. I would love to get to that point, and I'd love to eventually.
Will you ever really get to that, though? Because you you take new animals in. There's always medical bills, and there's always repairs, things like that.
Yeah.
If you just joined us, this is Lakeshore Public Radio. We are talking with Aaron of Aaron's Farm. It's an annual sanctuary in Hobart, Indiana. Glenn Reyna of Rockin' Horse is on the phone with us as well. And Glenn was one of the is one of the bands that is doing a fundraising concert at Memorial Opera House, which was scheduled originally for September 15th. We are bumping that to early 2019 due to scheduling issues. We got to get everybody back on board. So thank you if you've been supporting and helping share that information. We will get all that posted in the next day or two on the social media. But one of the reasons that we focused this concert on Aaron's Farm, and I do want to let you get back to your programs, but one of the things that was important that got my attention was the 4th of July situation. You made the newspapers. The horses were scared because people are irresponsible with fireworks. Mm-hmm. And that's what brought you to my attention.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of knew because my wife had told me that you were there and we were meaning to get there. But that really set the bar where we have to do something because the horses were injured, because people don't understand how dangerous fireworks are.
Yeah. And our animals are pretty desensitized to stuff. They've been through lots of stuff, and you know, they've heard fireworks before. I did not anticipate, I think when I moved to Hobart, like fireworks going on for 2 weeks, it's the 4th. And so I think after so many days, a couple of them just kind of lost it. They couldn't, you know, and that particular night it was like they were going off in every direction. So it's like, and they were spinning around and didn't know which direction to go.
And it's dark.
And we've been renovating. So I've been replacing some of this fencing that came with the property, and there was like a small section that I hadn't gotten to that was still kind of unsafe. And of course
that's where they
ran through. Yeah. So they got all scraped up. So yeah, this Patreon thing that I was talking about has been helping us chip away at new fencing, and donations that have come in has been helping. So to be a Patreon, you could sign up at www.patreon.com/Aaron's Farm. And it's like, that's our
monthly
donors.
Link on Aaron's Farm for those?
Yes.
It's on our short-term memory. Can't remember all that.
It's on our Facebook page. It's on our Instagram.
Aaronsfarm.com.
.net.
That's right. You're a nonprofit.
That's right.
.net. And also on Facebook, just go to Aaron's Farm 1.
Yeah.
What are the plans you've got?
So what we would like to do is, you know, we're trying to update and do the fencing and stuff now, but what I would like to do in the next year or two is, you know, put a learning center up. We want to be like a destination of Hobart where schools can come, field trip, like have classes there. You know, we want to have a learning center that's attached to a barn, you know, that would have a little hospital area for some of our rescues that come in that need a little additional help. But mainly a learning center where we could do these programs in-house, where the animals could stay here. We had a little bit of a building like that at our previous farm. We don't have that now, so it's really hurting us that way. But once we have that center, we can just, you know, right now, like most of our educational tours are weather-based, you know, because everything's outside.
Right.
So when we have this building put up and we've got this amazing design from this architect, it's just going to be amazing. But when we have that, it's going to allow us to do all this stuff year-round and just have constant classes going on, no matter what the weather is. Right now, you know, if people want to come and we end up getting a big thunderstorm, we have to cancel.
Right.
So, because there's nowhere for them to go inside.
So, will it be interactive and embrace technology with videos and hands-on situations, like you see at museums and in zoos?
Oh, absolutely. And it would be more of like a classroom setting, but absolutely all of that stuff, like nature center type stuff all over. And then, you know, we've got, you know, like 2 miles of trails and stuff, so we can do a lot of nature. I've got big ideas for nature groups and classes and things like that. So we, you know, in addition to the classes and the camps and stuff that we already have.
Now, you mentioned twice your daughter. What's her take on living on a farm?
I think she loves it, but at the same time, I think she's, you know, being an only child, she's, you know, doesn't have siblings to wrestle with or anything. So she's wrestling with goats and she's fighting goats and sheep for mom's attention. And, you know, so,
that's definitely a unique childhood.
She came up to me the other day, our little dog is Beanie. And she came up to me, she's like, Beanie's not shearing, 'cause they were playing fetch. Like, so it's like her, but she just started, you know, a little toddler class. So she could hopefully make some human friends.
Is this something your family is you know, was involved in? I mean, is this something that was a family project at any point? Or is this just you saying, I'm unique, I'm doing this, whether anybody likes it or not? Kind of like when you're a musician and you say, I'm going to be in a band, and your parents go get a real job.
I think, you know, it definitely was my crazy idea and dream. And I think my parents spent their whole life shaking their heads at me. But they were also extremely supportive. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be here without them and their support. And, you know... You know, my dad always teased me, oh, okay, all right, okay. Like, but, you know, but I know they're, I wouldn't be here without them. And my entire family, you know, has been so supportive and helped me in, you know, every way that they could. But because I think people just see, you know, once they come out and really see what we're doing and see the vision we have and they see that it's working and it's growing and, you know, it's going to happen. You know, we're going to get this building, we're going to grow and do all this stuff. So I think people kind of caught on to that early on that, I'm going to make it happen.
How has Hobart been, and the community at large around Hobart, Maryville, but especially Hobart, since that's where you've chosen, how has the community welcomed you?
This community has been amazing.
Okay.
I mean, people have pulled over and stopped by, and like everyone, you know, at the gate, and I've said hello to them. You know, and everywhere I go, you know, I was at a gas station, like somebody was like, are you that girl with the farm? Oh, I love you. I follow you on Facebook. So it's been
great.
You're
the animal girl.
Yeah, people have been so wonderful and welcoming. So it's really, you know, because, you know, I think when you move from a city that you're comfortable with into a town where you don't know anybody, it can be nerve-wracking. But people have been so amazing, and I'm so grateful to be here. I love this town.
When you got here today, you had a lady with you.
Yes.
And she's on the board?
She's the chair of our board,
okay.
Marilyn Reed. Yeah.
So tell me a little about the board and what they do.
So we have a fantastic board. Marilyn is a chair, and she's also an attorney, so she gives me some great legal advice.
That always helps.
When we were talking about zoos earlier, I was thinking of Lisa. She's one of our board members, and she's a former zookeeper, so she always gives great perspectives on that. You know, I've learned a lot from her about that. Sarah is one of our hopefully I can hire her as a full-time employee someday. You know, she'll have to drop off the board if we do that. But she's been with us for 5-6 years, started as a volunteer, and she's amazing. So, and Vic and Hillary and Nancy, we have a whole group of amazing people. And who am I forgetting? Kevin.
Oh, there's the one guy out there.
Yeah, we have Mary. We have just an amazing group of supportive people.
I was going to say, is it all female-driven?
No.
Okay.
No, it's a good mix of people.
It was leaning that way for a while until Kevin got in there.
Yeah, Kevin and Vic, we got two boys. So it's a great group of people, and I couldn't do it without them.
Aaron's Farm, number one on Facebook, aaronsfarm.net is where you'll find more information. And if we go to the Facebook, or not the Facebook, but we go to the website, what are we going to find? When it's renovated now, and when will it be complete?
Hopefully in the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
You know, the original website that's up there, I designed myself, and I'm not.
It sells the product, basically.
Thank you.
No, I hate to call it a product.
Well,
sells the business.
Yeah, well, I was like a vet nurse for most of my life and worked with animals and worked at zoos and teachers' aides. So, like, my expertise is kids and animals.
You know,
It's not websites, it's not communication. So, so we're going to. Hopefully be simpler to navigate and straight to the point. So,
okay, there's a lot of pictures on here. You know, we talked about that a lot of people view the animals as food, and you mentioned animals are omnivores and carnivores, and a lot of people put down people that eat meat. Mm-hmm. Yet by nature, humans are carnivores. How do we justify? We can't retrain animals that are carnivores.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard to make a wolf eat corn and beans when he wants to eat that rabbit that just ran across in front of him. How do we evaluate that from your perspective?
You know, now, first of all, some people don't think humans are carnivores. Some people think that we are frugivores or plant-based people. You know, that's a whole argument for another day.
Right.
But I personally am a vegan person.
I assumed you probably were.
But you know, I don't think they would call me that. They would probably call me plant-based because it's a very strict group to be in. But I try to identify that way. I try not to, you know, it's kind of conflict of interest if I'm eating the animals I'm rescuing.
Right.
But our group of people, our board is a good mix. There's some people that are and some people aren't. And, I don't know. Like, you know, dogs, what do they say, are omnivores mainly. You know, they can eat vegetables too. But, you know, I don't know. I feel.
I just didn't know where you were on the fence post on that, because that is a hot button topic.
Yeah, it's a hot topic. I don't really want to totally get into that.
That's fine. I just wondered what your perspective was on it, because animals are both just like humans.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah, I think, you know, I think that we don't need them in our diet, but like, you know, to each their own. I just, you know.
When did you become a plant-based person?
About two, a little over 2 years ago.
Okay. So you got into rescue and you were still having the burger now and then.
Yeah.
But now you have changed your lifestyle.
Yeah. And it just, you know, there was a few experiences that led me this way. And, mm-hmm. and I feel like this is where I'm supposed to be. But, you know, that's not something that we're preaching at our farm.
Right.
You know, people can make their own choices in life. We just hope that after they experience the animals at our house, that they make compassionate choices. Because they see that they're like us, you know, they're thinking beings that have, you know, good days and bad days, and, you know, they're emotionally drained from bad experiences like us, you know, so we hope that people just leave and make compassionate choices, but that's their decision.
What was your first animal? You mentioned an iguana, but what was your first animal that you took in as a rescuer, as a refuge, and what was it like to be a city girl and have this odd animal?
Probably our first like farm animal rescue, because there's so many, but would be Porkchops the pig.
Oh, okay.
And I did not name him that. He came with that name. But he was like just abandoned at a farm. Like somebody, he was like the stable pig at a horse stable, and then they moved on and just like left him behind.
Wow.
So
that blows my mind that people can do that.
Well, that's one of, like, the pot-bellied pig issue is a huge one.
Well, people get them because they think they're cute. They won't grow up, but then they do.
Yeah, we have 10 pot-bellied pigs at our farm, and I've got probably 10 people on a wait list, and I just got a call the other day from another sanctuary that has 25 that they need to relocate because they're having health issues. So it's just never-ending. And, you know, I just feel like everyone thinks they're these cute little things that stay small, but they're not. They're always three generations away from a normal pig. So there's no such thing as a micro pig. They're all going to get bigger. And people say, oh, it got too big. I just read my. I'm like, no, he just grew up. This is what he was supposed to do. You know, so.
The tortoise is interesting. Yeah. Where did he come from?
So we have 10 of those tortoises. They're called African spurred tortoises. And people get them as pets. You can get them at a pet shop. They're cute little guys sitting at the counter. And people pay $100 for them. They think it's cool. And then a couple years later, the novelty wears off. And just like everybody else, they get thrown away.
And they live for 100 years or
160
more.
Years, some of these guys. And they can be, you know, they can grow up to 200 pounds. So a couple of them I've had for 15 years, you know. So it's just, you know, there's no limits to animals in need. You know, they come, there's parrots, there's frogs, there's cows, there's horses. They come in all shapes and sizes, and we try to, you know, help what we can adequately help at our farm.
Okay.
You know.
Glenn, you've been very quiet. Any thoughts?
Well, the one thing I was thinking about, I remember our visit to the farm, second visit to the farm, that Aaron was telling us, you know, not stories, but situations where people had abandoned horses. And I mean walked away from horses that could not find their own food, and they were starving to death. And people knowingly walked away from animals. I don't understand. I could never understand. How could somebody do that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's knowing that the animal is going to die a slow death from starvation. It's kind of scary to think that we share a planet with human beings that think that way.
Right. I always tell people too, it's like nobody's forcing you to have a pet. Like if you choose to have a pet, choose to take care of it and be responsible and for its natural life, you know. And
but I mean, they don't even tell people that. By the way, there are some horses starving over here. If you want to do something about it, go ahead. I mean, they just walk away and without much of a chance that anybody would discover that and discover the bones. Human beings really disappoint me sometimes.
There are very horrific stories in the animal world. Every rescue's got them, and some are worse than others. And again, as Aaron mentioned, it's an emotional roller coaster. And I think that you deserve so much credit just for that aspect of it, because how you can keep your wits. I mean, I have a hard time at our shelter just seeing some things. And I'm not there every day.
Yeah.
I do the fundraising stuff. So I'm out doing the events more than I'm doing the actual rescue per se. But the stories, and I see some of the aftermath, and it tears me up. I don't sleep at night.
Yeah.
You know, videos and scaldings and stabbings and shootings. I mean, what's wrong with people? I mean, we need more people like you.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we, you know, yeah, we hope to do as much more, you know, we hope to grow and to help the community, but also to help more animals as much as we can in the next couple of years.
So. We're just about out of time. And I just want to remind everyone once again to help out as you can. If you want to volunteer, if you can make a financial donation, if you just want to visit and bring the kids to learn how to care for animals, aaronsfarm.net and Aaron's Farm number one on Facebook. And please watch all the social pages for the rescheduling of the concert at the Memorial Opera House in Valparaiso. Again, the September 15th. Concert that we had with Rockin' Horse. Glenn from the band has been our guest as well, and Chick Norris from Chicago. That show on the 15th of September has been canceled, but it's being rescheduled for early 2019, a date soon to be announced. And we are counting on people out there to spread the word. Come out and enjoy a great show and know that all the money is going to help these animals we've been talking about and help Erin in her task and her mission.
Yeah.
It is a mission.
Thank you.
So we're going to leave you with a song. This was written by a good friend of mine that I do a lot of work with. It was about a cat that came to him and helped him through a very tough time. And the cat was having a tough time and they bonded and healed each other. And the cat eventually died. And he wrote this song about it. It's Jeff Sarver from Portage, Indiana, and Nectar. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Watching him sitting there thinking with his paws on the poles of old town. He was fearless in his fortune. He fought awful hard for love. He was older when it happened. Something really messed him up. Face off, one thing or another was a long haul. Had it tougher than the others, got a new job, hoping to recover it all. Nectar, nobody cool as you were. Talk about a true survivor and the memories I remember. So come on in, begin again. Let us be forgiven for our sins. Life is all at hand right here as our sorrow, hope, and tears. Lift me down my walking frown. I think I'll wear my cane around. Today's the day they put the king of old town. Ground.